everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. Now, my name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, I want you to go and do something. Look at the title, and you tell me what this podcast is about. Okay, well, I don't know why the fridge you're talking to your device that you're using to listen to this podcast, because all this is pretty much recorded, so I just made you look crazy. But anyways, going into the specifics of what this is all about, this will be talking about the latest news that happened this week. So, for example, I will be discussing about some of the things that Jorge Gutierrez revealed about his upcoming feature, Kung Fu Space Punch, and also the next one that he is going to be working on. Then we will be looking into a special Halloween episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. Then we will be looking into yet another lawsuit in which someone is trying to claim that Disney stole their idea. Then afterwards, we will be looking into completely rebooting Sony Pictures Animation. And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Okay, now I just want to start this off by admitting a little something is that technically for this episode, we're not going to be looking into all the latest news that happened this week. Basically, what's going to be going on is that there are some stories that I will confess I have taken from last week, considering that it was the Annecy International Animation Film Festival. Now, I know it does seem it does seem kind of weird that I would talk about what's going on at Annecy right now instead of last week, but that is mainly because a lot of stuff did happen last week, and especially the fact that a lot of people were focusing a lot more on E3, so there was that little excuse. But at least I got this week to pretty much make things up for it and try to catch up what has been going on one of the biggest festivals in animation. So let's get right down to it and let's talk about what's been happening with Jorge Gutierrez. Now, in the field of animation, Jorge is starting to really make a name for himself, especially both as an artist and also as a director, especially after creating The Book of Life. So now, right now in his studio, well, not his studio, but at the studio that he's working on, Real Effects, he pretty much went and discussed about what's going to be happening with his upcoming films and revealed more details on the next project that he is working on right now, which is Kung Fu Space Punch. Now, I'm going to be using my source here in Variety to explain a little bit of what's going on. And it says apparently the plot will be about Johnny Holiday, a charming American biker space outlaw, leads a motley wild bunch of rebel bandits in a collision course with legendary villain Cthulhu to determine the fate of the galaxy. Along the way, Johnny also has to face off with Ramona Sanchez, a hot-headed childhood rival who now protects their town of Rio Bravo as a hard-ass hardcore cop, enforcing the law with an iron fist. And in terms of the tone that's going to be going on, I mean, keep in mind, this is something in which the title is Kung Fu Space Punch, so there's going to be a lot of aspects. So, in fact, Gutierrez even mentioned that it's going to be a funny mashup of 90s kung fu films, spaghetti westerns of the 60s, and the epic space adventures of the 70s, 80s, and today. So, keep in mind, you got the sci-fi aspect, you got the kung fu aspect, you got the comedy aspect, you got the spaghetti western aspect, you got the animation aspect, you got so many things that are going on. I mean, what else can you fit in there? Well, apparently there is another aspect. It's actually a subtle commentary about the U.S.-Mexican border. To pretty much go into specifics, this is someone who actually really has a fascination with it, considering this is a man who actually grew up inside the U.S.-Mexico border. He mentioned that I love outlaws that go to Mexico and find their souls. I love westerns. It's my favorite genre. As a Mexican, we are always the bad guys. I like the ones where the bad guys are Americans. Well, you're in luck, Jorge, because I do know one big story that's going on right now where the Americans are the bad guys, and that is called the Trump administration. All right, anyways, moving right along. He even mentioned, movies are not about characters or worlds or stories. I believe movies are about relationships. For me, that's the core of the film. A Mexican girl and American guy. In the movie, Johnny has to grow a conscience and Ramona has to grow a heart. And, you know, that is actually an interesting theory in movies, to be honest. Like, even for someone like me who has been doing, being a film critic and also a film analyst for so long, it does bring up an interesting theory how movies are about relationships. And on that level, like, I can definitely see where he's going with it, and especially in his last work with The Book of Life, that really does show a lot of relationship aspects, especially, like, considering it's not necessarily about Manolo, but it's actually his love story with Maria, his friendship with Joaquin, his relationship that he has with his family. So I could definitely see where there is a relationship aspect. And if I would have to bring up an animated film that's probably the greatest example that's all about relationships, it's Disney's The Jungle Book, specifically the original 1967 movie. In that aspect, you could definitely see that the biggest strength is the relationship between all the characters. It's not necessarily just about Mowgli. It's about Mowgli's relationship with some of the animals that he would meet in the jungle, rather it be with Bagheera, Baloo, or some of the new people that he would encounter, like Scar, King Louie, or even the vultures. It's all about the relationship of the characters instead of just the characters themselves that actually do make that movie. So he does bring up a pretty good point, and it does give an interesting look onto movies in general. But going back to what I was talking about, basically with the whole border aspect, it does seem like an interesting thing. Like I said before, Jorge Gutierrez grew up all his life between the U.S.-Mexico border. And when you think about that area right over there, it is true that it does seem like it kind of has its own culture of its own, where it's not necessarily more American culture, it's not necessarily more Mexican culture, but it's kind of like this big mix of both, where it pretty much becomes this entirely new entity, where, like, a lot of the aspects would come together to create what's basically kind of like this little Tex-Mex town. And, seeing that little relationship, like, some people can think of kind of a broader way to seeing it, like kind of the relationship between U.S. and Mexico in general. But just that little area right there can tell an entirely different story than anyone else. So I could definitely see where he is going with it. And I know one of the biggest things to worry about from Kung Fu Space Punch is the fact that there could be too many things to go in at once. The sci-fi element, the space, the Western element, the Kung Fu element, the commentary element, and all that kind of stuff. It might feel like there's just too many different things going on at once. That could be the fear. But I do trust that Jorge Gutierrez will find a way to take all these elements and find that happy medium, to find that center in which everything can fit well and that they would belong with each other. You know, like when you see Kung Fu Space Punch, there is a point to have the Western element or the U.S.-Mexico border element or the Kung Fu element or the Western element and all that kind of stuff. I do trust that Jorge Gutierrez is a talented director who is capable of actually taking all those elements and make them feel comfortable in this one feature. So who knows how that's going to go? We don't have a specific release date on how that's going to happen. But again, I do trust Jorge can actually do something about it. However, this is not the only thing that he has mentioned, and in fact, that's not necessarily the biggest story that actually came out of it. The real big story is actually the fact that Jorge Gutierrez made the announcement that there will be a Book of Life 2. That's pretty much the biggest thing that even this article on Variety was actually discussing. Now, to pretty much put it in short, there's nothing too much that he actually revealed about the Book of Life. It's mostly just going to be a continuation of what's going on after the events of the first movie. And that's pretty much it. That's all that we know so far. And with the philosophy that Jorge Gutierrez mentioned, so we could be seeing a little bit more now what's going on with the love story between Manolo and Maria, what's going on with the friendship of Manolo and Joaquin, and so much more aspects that could be going on. And who knows? Like, he did even hint out that there is a possibility we could even see some of the gods returning, like Xibalba and La Muerte. So maybe we're going to see a lot of characters coming back, but we're not 100% sure about what are the new aspects of it. But I will say, interestingly enough, though, it did state that there was at one point that they kind of thought up of a fun little idea for the Book of Life 2, and they actually create, and well, when I mean they, I mean Jorge Gutierrez, his wife Sandra Equihua. I apologize, Sandra, if I mispronounce your name, and also art director Paul Sullivan. What they did is that they kind of made up this fake poster for this special art exhibition called Sequels, where artists would come in and they would create a poster for a movie that would never happen. So, like, you would see posters for stuff like Space Jam 2 or Iron Giant 2 or what else can I think of, like a Fantasia 3 or Pinocchio 2 or even like a sequel to some of the Pixar films like Finding Nemo 3 or Ratatouille 2 or Bug's Life 2, you know, stuff like that. And what they basically showed in this poster, what they made up for it, it actually really looks awesome, where you got these two new characters, kind of like two new gods that are supposed to represent, like, kind of like the new version of Xibalba and La Muerte, where one is dressed up more in this Mayan-like outfit, and then you got another dude that's more, like, kind of represents a lot more as death in a way. Kind of, like, in a way you could interpret it as Xibalba 2.0. But then, also, at the same time, you actually got Dia de los Muertos versions of all the main characters. It's not just Manolo, but you also got, like, Dia de los Muertos versions of Joaquin and Maria, and they're pretty much ready to go and fight. And it actually does look awesome. It's the kind of thing that you look at and, like, you want to see a movie of this. That actually really does look awesome right there. And just by looking at this poster, it does give me this idea and something that I do hope for, that they can pretty much take the Book of Life and put it into a whole new level. Now, I understand that the Book of Life is meant to be this movie about Dia de los Muertos, but if there would be more Book of Life movies coming out, like if there would be like sequels like 2, 3, 4 and all that kind of stuff, it could actually give Jorge Gutierrez an excuse to actually go and make movies based on Mexican culture, Mexican myths and lores, and all that kind of stuff to tell their stories. And I kind of got this idea when looking at the Mayan character, like the Mayan goddess or La Muerte 2.0, where maybe they can look more into these Mesoamerican myths, or they can look into some like Mayan legends and all that kind of stuff. It does present some endless possibilities, and it could actually bring up some great ideas, and especially with someone like Jorge Gutierrez, where in the Book of Life, he really does bring out that Mexico feeling, like this is something that would feel like some Mexican heritage did come out of this. It could turn out great. Like, this can actually be such a great idea, and pretty much explore the legends of Mexico and bring that out as a movie, but it would feature characters like Joaquin and Manolo. It's, you know, it does have some great possibilities. But not only that, but you could guarantee there are going to be fans who are going to check it out regardless. Like, honestly, when reading this, the one thing that really did shock me the most is actually the fact that in this article, it mentioned that The Book of Life only made $100 million at the box office. And I had to double check on Box Office Mojo, and it actually is true. And honestly, I was really shocked because with the way that fans are reacting to it and the way that the popularity kind of grew afterwards, it doesn't seem like a movie that would end up getting $100 million at the box office. In fact, this movie, like The Book of Life in general, actually feels a lot more popular than most movies that would make two or three times more at the box office than them, really. And one of the biggest reasons why I say that is because The Book of Life, in a way, kind of ended up in the same situation as DreamWorks' Rise of the Guardians, where, yeah, sure, the box office numbers is not all that impressive, but the way fans reacted, they absolutely adore it, down to the point that when you would go to a geek convention or like a Comic-Con or stuff like that, you'll always end up finding someone who would end up dressing up like one of the characters. You'll always find someone who would either dress up as Manolo or Maria, or especially the most popular one is La Muerte. You'll always find someone dressed up like La Muerte. In a way, she is actually the new version of Jack in Rise of the Guardians. Or if you want to see someone who would really go far with going to cosplay as a Book of Life character, look up the people who would dress up like Xibalba. They really are impressive, I gotta say. But yeah, this whole idea of a sequel to the Book of Life does really open up new possibilities, and I really do hope Jorge Gutierrez can really take advantage of that to see all the different ideas that you can go with making more stories with the Book of Life. Like, you don't have to just make it be about Dia de los Muertos. You can really explore it onto the different stories that Mexico would have. And honestly, this actually does make me rather excited to see what other movies are going to come out with, basically other movies that are going to be coming out of Jorge Gutierrez, rather it be from Kung Fu Space Punch, or, like, the potential of The Book of Life 2. We don't know when they're going to be released, but who knows? I'm going to be pretty optimistic about it. Now, our next story that we have right over here, we're going to be looking into a Halloween special. You could say there is actually a bit of a smooth transition going from Dia de los Muertos onto Halloween. But this time, it's going to be on television, and they're pretty much going to be doing something a little bit similar like what they did on Christmas. And what I'm talking about is going to be a special called SpongeBob SquarePants, Legend of Bikini Bottom. Now, if you want to know what this special is going to be about, again, going into my source here in Variety, it stated that the special finds SpongeBob and company donning costumes and decorating their neighborhood for some Halloween fun, but the spooky Flying Dutchman has other plans. And basically, that's pretty much it. SpongeBob and the gang, they want to go and have some Halloween fun, but then suddenly, their plans might be screwed up by the Flying Dutchman, who seems to be the antagonist of this special. Now, the one thing to really note about Legend of Bikini Bottom is actually the fact that they are going to execute it in the similar veins of what they did with It's a SpongeBob Christmas, where this is actually going to be a stop-motion special that's going to be a bit of an homage to some of the Rankin Bass works. And on top of that, there's even going to be a special song for it. Going back in my source, it stated that the special will feature an original song by voice actor Mr. Lawrence, which you guys know as Plankton, with music by Eben Schletter. The Legend of Bikini Bottom producers The Legend of Bikini Bottom production, sorry about that, uses 27 sets that feature such items as 15 boxes of breakfast cereal to create Bikini Bottom's coral reefs, 8 pounds of glitter to decorate SpongeBob's pineapple house, and hundreds of popsicle sticks to make up the planks of a scary roller coaster track. The special was written by Mr. Lawrence, with Brian Morante serving as storyboard director. Screen Novelty, which, by the way, Screen Novelty is going to be the people that are going to be doing the stop motion of this special, which just like what they did before with It's a SpongeBob Christmas. Mark Caballero and Seamus Walsh are directing, with Chris Finnegan producing. And that's basically the whole idea of what's going on right over here. Now, when I listen to this, it kind of reminds me of the first ever Halloween special that happened in SpongeBob SquarePants all those years ago. Probably, like, even back as early as 1999 or in somewhere in the early 2000s, somewhere around that range. But I remember it was the story of where SpongeBob wanted to be scary and he wanted to dress up as the Flying Dutchman, but the way that he did it, it's pretty much being dressed up as a, like one of those bedsheet ghosts where, like, you just have an entire white bedsheet over you with just two little holes as eyes. And what ends up happening at the end is that suddenly the real Flying Dutchman would come in. And that is actually the episode where they actually introduce the Flying Dutchman, not as a ship for Davy Jones, but as this pirate ghost. And I guess in a way, it's kind of like with this thing, with what they're doing with Legend of Bikini Bottom, they're pretty much mixing the tone and the execution of It's a SpongeBob Christmas with a little bit of what they have done with that Halloween special. I forgot what it's called, but, like, you pretty much mix them together, and it looks like that's what they're going to be doing right over here. Now, personally, I have not seen the It's a SpongeBob Christmas special. I gave up on SpongeBob a long time ago. Like, honestly, I've only seen a bit of the first 100 episode, and yeah, like a little bit after the first 100 episodes, I think I kind of quit somewhere. I think it was somewhere at the end of season 4. Like, I pretty much finished off with all of season 4, or maybe somewhere in season 5. It's somewhere in that area, but I kind of gave up there. But honestly, with SpongeBob right over here, like I said before, I haven't seen it, so I can't really determine if it's, like, great or not, but, you know, it is actually pretty cute of an idea that they are doing SpongeBob, but in the veins of the Rankin-Bass specials. And especially, like, when you do think of Rankin-Bass, they didn't just do Christmas specials like Santa Claus is Coming to Town and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but they also did a bit of Halloween as well with Mad Monster Party. So this could be what we would end up having in here, is going to be the SpongeBob version of Mad Monster Party, but with all the Halloween, you know, with all the Halloween stuff. And especially when you do think about it, it's going to be pretty unique and interesting to see how they're going to execute Halloween with stop motion. Are they going to go in a similar track to some of the Laika works like Coraline and Paranorman, or are they going to execute their own effects? Because keep in mind, like, they're like, when you think about the idea of doing a ghost in a stop motion movie, like, a lot of special effects are going to be done. So maybe on a technical level, in terms of animation, it could be quite impressive, but who knows how that's going to go. But if you guys are interested in checking out the SpongeBob special of Legend of Bikini Bottom, then all you have to do is wait until October to see all the scares that SpongeBob can offer. Now for our next story, oh god, it happened again. And honestly, I am not a fan of these stories, but I know very well they're just gonna keep coming over and over and over. And I'm sure with you guys as well, you have heard of this story before, but with many different interpretations. Now, last time I got into a story like this, it was the writer Gary L. Goldman who sued Disney because he claimed that Disney stole his idea for Zootopia. Well, apparently, something like this is happening again, but this time the subject is going to be a little bit older now, with Inside Out. Now, allow me to go and read you the little bit here, coming from my source here on The Hollywood Reporter. It says, Denise Daniels is suing Disney and Pixar, claiming the 2015 animated hit is based on her children's program called The Moodsters, which she created to help kids better manage their emotions. Daniels, who co-founded the National Childhood Grief Institute, said the idea was born after years of counseling children after tragedies like Hurricane Katrina and 9/11. It started with a woodwork to help doctors work with pediatric patients using color-coded symbols for emotions, and with the help of a high-profile and accomplished team, it eventually was developed into a pilot. Now, admittedly, looking into the Moodsters, I have done some research myself, and if I can be honest, yeah, I actually do see some similarities with Inside Out. Like, immediately, I just went on the Moodsters webpage, and you can immediately see the characters. In a way, they are very similar, where you got a bunch of characters that represent emotions, and in here we actually got five of them, and you see their little headquarters, which is a little bit similar to what we got in Inside Out, like the headquarters, what's going on in the mind. And even some of the characters are actually quite similar, where you got the main character Joy, which in this case is Happiness. He's pretty much all in yellow, just like Joy. And then you got Sadness, who is blue. And you also have Anger, who is red. Now, the two things that are actually different from Inside Out is that they do have fear, but the character here is green. And instead of disgust, you actually have love. Now, the only thing that really is different, like the one thing that you can immediately tell, like, okay, I see some Inside Out, but it is not Inside Out. Number one, you can definitely tell how it is especially geared towards children. Like, this is absolutely for kids, hands down. Like, even though with Inside Out, it's made for a Pixar audience, so basically it's for everyone. Kids and adults can absolutely love it and enjoy it. But in here, it looks like it's meant just for kids. It's not really for adults to experiment and to enjoy and watch and all that kind of stuff. And as for the designs of these characters, the one thing I gotta say, they look weird. I think that's the only thing I can really describe these characters. They honestly look like a mixture of Gremlins with the Oogie Loves. And that's the one thing that does make me a little bit uncomfortable, is the fact that they're giving me Oogie Love vibes. And you know, it really doesn't help that not only the style, like the design of the characters do look like Oogie Loves, but even like just the colors in general, how they're all monotone colors. And also, oddly enough, each one of them looks like this ripoff of Sherlock Holmes. Like, everybody has this own different interpretation of how to dress up like Sherlock Holmes, where they have like kind of like this weird top and also a different detective hat. Rather it be the classic Sherlock Holmes cap, or they're just wearing a different kind of fedora. Like, they're all little detectives and they each have their own little tools, where apparently they have a mirror, a notebook, a meter, and also a flashlight, which apparently you could buy all separately along with a little Moodster book. Available right now at Target and Amazon. All right, but anyways, that's pretty much all about the Moodsters that you would need to know. But going back into the lawsuit that's going on, it says that Daniels is suing for breach of implied in fact contract, claiming that she relied on entertainment industry customs and practices and expected that she would be compensated if Disney and Pixar used her idea. Okay, there is a huge problem already right here. The breach of implied in fact contract. If you don't know, I've done a bit of research myself to know what that means. Basically, implied in fact contract, it's basically this agreement that there's no written agreement about it, there's no verbal agreement about it, but apparently implied. So Daniels kind of connected the dots by herself. And by the way, the connection with, like, her direct connection with Disney and Pixar is that apparently it's stated that Daniels claim her team pitched the idea to Disney and Pixar every year from 2005 to 2009. And it is true that the Moosters did last a lot longer than Inside Out. Last I checked, they came from the 2000, like the early 2000s even. But going back to this implied in fact contract, is that somehow Daniels felt like there's some kind of thing that it was implied that she would get compensated for the idea of Inside Out and stuff like that. But no, like, honestly, hearing this implied in fact contract, it just sounds like I'm expecting something, even though nobody said anything about it, even though there's no written words. And I feel like that's going to be the aspect right there that's going to really screw over this entire lawsuit. She's basically flat out stating that, well, I thought I was going to get paid. I mean, Inside Out sounds like my idea. And I will give her the fact that, yes, there does seem to be some similarities with the Moodsters with Inside Out. That doesn't mean she's going to win the frickin' lawsuit. I've said this time and time again. There's no way that she can freaking expect that she can actually just go sue Disney and they will somehow be dumbfounded and she'll end up winning the case. No, Disney is going to freaking fight back. And I mean, with a company like Disney, they would make sure they would hire some of the best lawyers in the world. And as I've said in the beginning of this story, this is not the first time that this has happened, and this will not be the last time that it'll happen. So Disney has already been prepared whenever this stupid crap happens. So there must be at least something that Disney is already prepared for to pretty much screw over her entire case, where it's pretty much invalid and all it's doing is just wasting everyone's time, really. I don't really see the point why you would want to go and sue a big company like Disney for a movie like Inside Out, which already made its large amounts of money and already won all of its awards. I mean, keep in mind, back in the beginning of 2016, during the award season, Inside Out was pretty much grabbing everything that has the title of Best Animated Feature. So, like, it already gained such a massive reputation, and plus the fact that rumors are already spreading that apparently there will be an Inside Out ride coming soon. We'll just have to wait and see if it's true at D23. But still, man, it's like, why do you even want to do that in the first place? Like, what do you expect out of it? Like, do you honestly think you can actually beat out Disney with this? Even if your case is true, even if there is some fact to it that maybe Disney stole the idea of the Moodsters in order to create Inside Out, it doesn't mean you're going to get away. Like, it doesn't mean that you're going to do justice and Disney is not going to get away with it. They will. And as far as I'm concerned, with the modern culture that we have right now, nobody really knows about the Moodsters, yet everybody knows about Inside Out. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. Now, I'm not dissing Denise Daniels here at all. I'm not saying that her work is bad and she should give up or anything like that. You know, honestly, she is a fantastic woman, and I could see that she has done a lot of great things, and especially with the National Childhood Grief Institute. That is fantastic of her, and I applaud her and her team for actually creating that so that kids can psychologically get better after some massive tragedies like after 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina and stuff like that. But come on, girl, do you really think that you can stop Disney from continuing their success with Inside Out? And like, what do you want from it? Like, honestly, do you think they're really just gonna randomly give you all the credit when they've already set up the credit to be for the directors like Pete Docter? I mean, come on, let's be real here. I just feel like there's just no point to it whatsoever. But if you want to waste your time and go try to sue Disney for this, go right ahead. I can't stop you, but don't be surprised if Disney wins the case. Just saying. Okay, so for our next story right over here, I just gotta say, I randomly stumbled upon it when I was just looking for stories on Variety. And then I just found this one and I was like, woo, this is interesting. So I read more into it and it really was interesting. Originally, I wanted this to be Animat's Pick of the Week, but then I picked something else that is a far bigger story and you'll know what I mean. But it definitely is still something that is worth talking about. And again, this has happened at the Annecy International Animation Film Festival, where Christine Belson had a masterclass about the toughest mission that she has to do in her career ever. And that is rebooting Sony Pictures Animation. Now, as you guys may know, ever since the beginning of 2015, Christine Belson has been named the new president of Sony Pictures Animation. And it was her job to pretty much take the company and, like, pretty much turn it upside down and try to reshape it in a way so that it can actually be taken seriously as a competitor in the animated film industry. You know, to really try to make it climb up there against the big boys like with Disney, Illumination, Pixar, DreamWorks, and all those people. And so far, with what happened with Sony, it's not been going well. And like, even the article itself stated that Sony has yet to actually have a big animated hit. The closest that they really had with it so far is just the Hotel Transylvania films, and with Hotel Transylvania 2. However, I just want to mention right now that the article actually did start it out by stating a change in the schedule in terms of what Sony Pictures Animation is going to be releasing. And apparently, there are going to be a total of 5 animated features that are going to be released in 2020 and 2021. So that's a lot of animated films. And it's basically similar to what's going to be going on right now. Like, between 2017 and 2018, there are going to be 5 Sony Pictures Animation films. However, there is one big catch to this, and that is that in 2019, there will be no Sony Animation films. And how ironic is it, is that it seems like now every year, if there is an Angry Birds movie release during that time, Sony Animation just really steps back because, oh man, the Angry Birds are coming in. We gotta make room for them, boys! Nah, but that's just a little coincidence. What is interesting, though, is that the article will then go on to discuss about where is it that it could possibly find its big hit. As it's stated right here, that it may seem like an original move by a new Hollywood animation studio head, but it's one way of confronting Sony Pictures Animation's major challenge. Producing animated features since 2006 Open Season, Sony Pictures Animation has still to fire up a Despicable Me-sized franchise, which can, as Belson out, provide a transformational moment defining a studio style. So they have yet to really have something to really make a big name of themselves. Yes, they have been crafting franchises with movies like Smurfs, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and Hotel Transylvania, but it's not really something that kind of shook up the animation industry. It's not really something that really made a huge name, not only for the franchise, but also for the whole company in itself. I mean, that's why nowadays, like with the Despicable Me films, and also with what happened last year with The Secret Life of Pets and Sing, Illumination is definitely one of the biggest names in the animation industry nowadays, like a definite competitor against movies like with Disney and Pixar and DreamWorks and all those people. And there could be a possibility that maybe Hotel Transylvania 3 can do something, but let's be honest, is it really going to do anything to the franchise to really make it, like, go way up there, up and beyond and stuff like that? But we don't really know, honestly. And on top of that, One thing that she really wants to reshape is to go and bring out more original content, because that was one of the that's honestly one of the biggest problems that Sony Pictures Animation has, is that they are so focused on trying to make franchises that they suddenly forget to do original ideas. Because as I am recording this, like, they only have 5 franchises in total. They just have, and that's also without counting the Aardman films, because those belong to Aardman, of course. Like, the only ones that they have is just Despicable, not Despicable Me. Pfft, I'm sorry about that. Wow, that is a stupid mistake on my part. They only have Open Season, Surf's Up, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, The Smurfs, and Hotel Transylvania. And even the last original movie that they have released that is like a new IP for Sony Animation was Hotel Transylvania back in 2012. And technically, yes, there is going to be a new IP that's going to be coming up, but it's the freaking Emoji Movie. And so far, I don't think people are really getting into the Emoji Movie. And that's very lightly to say. And on top of that, though, going back to what I was saying into this article, apparently, Christine Belson also mentioned some of the original animated features that are going to be coming up. What she is hoping that some of them could actually make a new and strong impact onto Sony Animation. And, beforehand, if you guys want to know about the upcoming projects that Christine Belson did mention, I just want to start right now by saying, no, guys, Popeye is not one of them. You just probably have to accept right now that maybe the project is dead. Enjoy your freaking emojis. Okay, anyways, going back to here. It did state that one of the projects, apparently, it says that one of the minds behind Gravity Falls, Michael Rianda, will direct a semi-autobiographical tale about a family road trip. That's the autobiographical bit. During the robot uprising, he has as clear a vision of his movie and the tone as anyone I have ever encountered. So she's pretty much excited about this semi-autobiographical idea from Michael Rianda. And then there is another one coming from director John Saunders, which says he will helm the story of the greatest love affair in the history of our planet, set in deep prehistory, about the first ever bonding between a man and a dog. And no, this is not a romance story, or maybe it is, and I should seriously be worried about that. All right, but Christine Belson also added in here that it's about heart, about comedy, especially nonverbal comedy. There are long stretches of movie where, because it's not a talking dog, they are playing silently. So there could be some elements of Shaun the Sheep movie right over there. And apparently there's also going to be another movie. It didn't really say anything of what it's going to be about. Or actually, no, I lied. Sorry. It did, actually. This is going to be coming from the co-writer of Kubo and the Two Strings, Shannon Tindall. And it said, he brought us an idea for a movie we immediately fell in love with, which is action-packed, but also a deeply emotional comedy about a cocky billionaire superhero who must grow up when he is forced to raise the orphan of his greatest foe. And then afterwards, she did mention about one of the projects that have already been announced, which is Vivo. And if you guys don't know what Vivo is, it is the story of a monkey, which it says, the plot turns on a monkey with a thirst for adventure and a deep passion for music, who suffers a treacherous passage from Havana to Miami to fulfill his destiny. And if you guys don't know, there are already some people who are attached to the project, and it actually does sound pretty exciting, where the director is actually one of the co-directors of The Croods, Kirk D'Amico, and the music is actually, it's actually going to be a musical with songs brought to us by the great Lin-Manuel Miranda. So it definitely does have some strong possibilities right over here. And that one has already got a release date set, which is going to be on December 18th, 2020. And interestingly enough, even though Christine Belson was silent on Popeye, She did actually mention that somehow the other project that got canceled a while back, which is Medusa, is actually going to be coming back. Now, there's no word on who the new director would be, but apparently she did mention that it is actually going to be a musical brought to us by the songwriters of La La Land. And to be very honest, I just want to say right now that, yeah, La La Land is a good movie, but I did feel like it was definitely overhyped, especially during the awards season. And when it comes to the songs, like, not all of them are bad, but a lot of them really are dull, especially some of the ones that are nominated, like, what was it, like, the audition song, or the City of Stars, the habit of the City of Stars. Like, honestly, if the songwriters can actually think up of a musical, if they can think up of musical numbers that are in the same veins of some of the first songs from that movie, then that would actually be fantastic. Like, they're definitely upbeat, they're a lot of fun, so that could be definitely good right over there. So maybe it could have some potential if they are going into that direction. So just want to mention right now, though, that with all those original films, not all of these that I have mentioned are going to be a part of the 2020 and 2021 lineup. And also, to add in extra, what Christine Belson wanted to do, what Christine Belson wants to do is that she wants Sony Pictures Animation to be the home where new directors can be made. So in a way, she's hoping that it could pretty much spark something that is similar to what happened with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, where after Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, they would actually go on to create movies that are a lot more successful and even a lot more better. And even with all the ones that I have mentioned, all of these are actually coming from new directors, with the exception of Kirk D'Amico for Vivo. And with all that said, it is actually very interesting that she is taking this big step to go and reboot Sony Pictures Animation that way. And the more I think about it, it actually is very true that an entire reboot to the company in general is actually a pretty good idea. But honestly, she would have to be fully committed, because if there is one thing that Sony Animation really does need, it's not just a reboot in terms of the format of the scheduling or a reboot in terms of the management. They've already have that set. But honestly, they also need a reboot in terms of their lineups. Now, maybe I've already said this before, but just in case, all of these movies that I have mentioned right here, like all the upcoming original projects, it's not a guarantee that all of them are going to be released in the 2020 and 2021 lineup. Yeah, exactly. Just like what I said before. There is a possibility that in that lineup, there would be included some franchise films as well. But honestly, Sony Animation needs to start out fresh. They need to drop everything that they have previously done before. They got to drop the Open Seasons, the Surf's Up, the Cloudies, the Smurfs, and also the Hotel Transylvanias. Honestly, if Sony Animation is smart, they got to end off Hotel Transylvania with the third one, and then, like, that's it. It would be done with it. Continuing afterwards, it would ultimately lead the franchise to become the next Ice Age, and it would no longer be fun for everyone. And what's going to happen is that the public will then afterwards just treat Hotel Transylvania like any other Adam Sandler film. So that's the dangerous aspect. But yeah, honestly, they got to drop whatever franchises that they have so that they can really start off with a clean slate and create new IPs. Because honestly, the current format that they have right now, it's not going well. And I definitely know for a fact that it's not going well, especially the fact that it's only been a year that they actually had to do some big changes in the lineup. I remember last year, they actually made an announcement that they would release 5 animated features between 2019 and 2020. 4 of which are just franchise movies. Like, Vivo would be the next one that's going to be an original IP from Sony, which honestly, that's just absolutely stupid. And you could tell somehow there's something that's going on right now that's not working, and that maybe production is not going well in their features, so that now, 2019, there's absolutely nothing, and they're going to restart with 2020 and 2021. And I would love to see that maybe Sony is just going to drop everything that they previously done before. And one thing that is actually very interesting is a little quote here from the Variety article actually stating that maybe that that transformational moment would come from Hotel Transylvania 3, playing off the most successful of the Sony Pictures Animation franchises. But for Belson's Masterclass, it looks questionable whether the SPA chief even wants to brand her studio with a Hallmark animation style. And honestly, that's what I mean by pretty much restarting fresh and also restarting from new IPs. Because in the current stance that Sony Animation is right now, all they're doing is just cartoony animated films. That's all that they have been producing so far, with the exceptions of the Smurf movies. It's all like, when you think about films like with the Cloudy films, or the Hotel Transylvania films, or the Smurf reboot, or what they're going to do soon with the Emoji movie, it's all in a cartoony style. Not good cartoony style, but still, they're just being this one-trick pony, and they're not even trying to go and experiment with other different styles, with other different forms of animation, with something a little bit more artistic or a little bit more realistic, or someone else's art style onto it. But no, like, they had to stick with that cartoony style. And honestly, like, if they really want to go and make Sony Pictures Animation better, they gotta drop that. Like, they can't always just rely on making cartoony animation, or else people will notice that they're just presenting the same dumb cartoony movie over and over, and a lot more people are just going to be less interested. So the thing is, right now, Sony really needs to adapt and try to completely change their format to where they got to drop everything that they've done before and try to make something new. Otherwise, they will be broken down. And especially, like I said before, their old schedule only lasted for about a year, and now they had to update it to, now they got to delay some of their works and have nothing for 2019. So the thing is, in the future, Sony Animation is always going to change. And on top of that, we have yet to see if this format of being like the old DreamWorks Animation is going to work in the first place. Because so far, like, we got Smurfs The Lost Village that was released, and that one is basically a box office bomb because it didn't even make $200 million at the box office and didn't even surpass $50 million domestically. And then the other movies coming up, like, that's another big story right over there. How is Sony Pictures Animation going to be after the release of the Emoji movie, and they are forever going to have the credit of being the makers of the Emoji movie? How is that going to work out? You know, it just feels like it might not work out as well, and maybe it'll end up making Sony Pictures lose money. And maybe in the future, because of the format that it was pretty much set up, there's no longer going to be a Sony Pictures Animation. And who knows, like, maybe 2018 things can get a little bit better with Hotel Transylvania 3 and the Spider-Man movie with Miles Morales. Who knows what's going to happen? But is it really going to be enough to save Sony Pictures Animation, to really build it up? Because honestly, with the ways that they're constantly reshaping, if this rebooting idea, like, if Christine Belson, like, if all she's got to do at Sony Animation is try to find different ways to reshape it and find different plans in order to, like, make Sony Animation rise up to the top, honestly, it might not be worth it, honestly, because, well, so far, all we're seeing, we're in the phase in Sony Animation where it's constantly trying to find ways to change itself up. And if it's always going to be doing that while the movies that they're bringing out is not working well, and, like, it might end up losing money for Sony Pictures, maybe Sony Animation as a whole is not going to be worth it. So who knows what the future holds, really? It's a big mystery, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens with Sony. And now we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, honestly, this is a story that I just cannot ignore. It is the biggest movie story that has occurred this week. And my God, the more that I look into it, the more research I would do for it, it's just really fascinating. And honestly, like, I look at it and I think to myself, I just can't not talk about this. I mean, I just gotta share my thoughts with it, with the people, because there's a lot of crazy stuff that's been going on. And even to this day, people on the internet are still freaking out about the scenarios that have been going on. Now, before that, allow me to tell you guys a little bit of a story. Now, as you guys may know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller are pretty much in the top of their game when it comes to being movie directors. Ever since 2014, when they have released both The Lego Movie and 22 Jump Street, they were like the toast of Hollywood, and they've gathered such a huge fan base in terms of their comedic style and with their movies. Like, they really were like some of the biggest names in Hollywood and gained massive support. So, when the news broke out that they would be the directors for the upcoming Han Solo spin-off film on Star Wars, like, everybody flipped out. Like, people got totally excited that they got Phil Lord and Chris Millers, the guys who brought us the 21 Jump Street films and the Lego Movie, and they're gonna go and do a Star Wars movie. They're gonna do something so monumental. It's like one of the biggest honors that you can have in Hollywood. But then, everything changed this week when the Fire Nation freaking attacked. The news broke out that Lord and Miller left production of the Han Solo spin-off film. And it really did come as a major shock because, like, in terms of the production, they only got 3/4 of the filming finished, and they didn't even get into the post-production yet. So leaving at this time is absolutely shocking. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller, while the president of Lucasfilms, Christine Belson, they said their little goodbyes, and they said that, oh, you know, it was great working with them. Okay, bye-bye, thank you, and all that kind of stuff. Like, here's a little quote from Phil Lord and Chris Miller. It stated, unfortunately, our vision and process, Unfortunately, our vision and process weren't aligned with our partners on this project. We normally aren't fans of the phrase creative differences, but for once, this cliche is true. We are really proud of the amazing and world-class work of our cast and crew. And I'm sure Christine Belson said something. Like, she did put out a quote, but I don't know if in this article specifically on Variety has it as well. But okay, anyways, it doesn't really matter. But what is actually really interesting is that you would see a lot of different sources on different film journalists' websites that they would say, like, they would say different things. Like, they would say that Phil Lord and Chris Miller quit, or that they just left, or that they decided they don't want to do it anymore. Kind of like make it show that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, like, they decided to leave on their own terms. But that is not what happened. They didn't quit. They got legitimately fired. Now you might be wondering, why? Why would they fire Phil Lord and Chris Miller? Well, apparently, ever since day one of production, it was basically Lord and Miller versus the Lucasfilm crew. So, like, every day, they were fighting off against the president, Kathleen Kennedy. They were fighting off against the crew at Lucasfilm. And they were fighting off against the executive producer and co-writer of this movie, Lawrence Kasdan. And if you guys don't know, Lawrence Kasdan is actually a veteran at Lucasfilm and also a Star Wars veteran. He has actually been a writer for the franchise ever since Empire Strikes Back. And he was even credited as one of the writers, or at least the screenplay writer, of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So basically, they were pretty much clashing and fighting to get their vision done, where the Lucasfilm crew just wanted to do it the Lucasfilm way, while Lord and Miller wanted to do it the Lord and Miller way. And ever since then, it really put in a mass hysteria on the internet. People were wondering, well, what's going to happen now? Are they still going to be getting credits for making this movie? Like, what's going to be the next step? Well, apparently, just 2 days after Lord and Miller got fired, Lucasfilm decided to go and bring in Ron Howard, a big name, another big name director, but someone who has years of experience, to go and be the director of the Han Solo spinoff movie. Now, at this point, as I am recording this, there's no other information of what's going to be happening next. How are they going to be resolving this issue on who's going to be taking credit for the directorial work? Especially, like I said before, the fact that it happened only during 3/4 of filming being done and all that stuff. So far, the one good thing is that this is not affecting the production at all, so that it doesn't mean that the Han Solo spinoff film is going to be delayed or anything. It's still going to be scheduled in May 2018. But with this whole process, what's going on right now is that Ron Howard's job is going to be to go and calm things down at Lucasfilms, to tell everyone that everything is going to be okay, to meet up with the cast, and that production is going to resume in July. Now, the one thing that I have seen that everybody is pretty much reacting is the fact that people are pissed off at Disney and Lucasfilm for actually firing Phil Lord and Chris Miller. They're pretty much mad now, saying, it's like, oh man, now this movie is gonna suck. You lost the opportunity to put in the greatest directors of our time, and now they're gonna be gone, and all that kind of stuff. But you know, if I could be honest, if I could play devil's advocate, I kind of see why Lucasfilm had to take out Lord and Miller in this situation. Because in this case, it really does say a lot about the filmmaking of Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Because the thing is that what Lucasfilm wanted to do is that they wanted to craft a Star Wars movie. And they have their traditional ways of trying to create a Star Wars movie. But with Lord and Miller, they wanted to basically create a Lord and Miller movie. They wanted to do the same thing like whatever they've done for 21 Jump Street and for the Lego movie, and just do whatever the fridge they want. And that is a little bit worrisome for Lucasfilm, because like the biggest fear that they have is that the Han Solo spinoff film under Lord and Miller would become a little bit too different to the other Star Wars films. And that's what they want to do. Like, that's what the job required. Is that they wanted wanted you to create a Star Wars film first, and then your film second. That's basically the whole point. But with Lord and Miller, they wanted to create their film first, and then a Star Wars film second. Like, the whole Star Wars aspect would be just an afterthought. So they wanted their tone to come out. But that's the thing. When you're assigned to do a Star Wars movie, you actually do have some rules to go in order to create a Star Wars movie. You're not just making anyone else's movie. You are legitimately making a Star Wars movie. So you do have to follow a template. You do have to follow a color palette. You do have to follow a tone. You have to make it so that your Star Wars movie can easily fit in with some of the other ones. That's basically what J.J. Abrams did. Like, he wanted to create a Star Wars film first, and then a J.J. Abrams film second. With that, with The Force Awakens, you can easily fit it with some of the other ones, with Empire Strikes Back, and with A New Hope, and Return of the Jedi, and all that kind of stuff. That's what Lucasfilms was worried about. They were afraid that Lord and Miller were making something that is way too drastically different, to the point that you can't really fit it in any other Star Wars film. And interestingly enough, ultimately, I think this really does say something about the filmmaking of Lord and Miller, or at least their filmmaking style. Because I think for the first time ever with this entire situation, we are seeing a limitation from Lord and Miller, something that they cannot do. And that is doing someone else's work. Like, they cannot make anyone's movie but their own. Like I said, the job required them to make a Star Wars movie first and then a Lord and Miller film second. But they cannot do that. They wanted to make a Lord and Miller film first. And when you think about some of their other movies, it is true. Like, they really do have a lot of creative liberties into it. And I know it does seem a little bit contradictory for me to say that, considering that many of their movies are based on already existing properties. Like, when you think about 21 Jump Street, that is actually based on an old TV show. Or Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, that's actually based on a children's book. But when you do compare those two things, they are drastically different to the Lord and Miller films. Like, when Phil Lord and Chris Miller made the 21 Jump Street movie, their mindset was not to make a 21 Jump Street movie first. It was to make a Lord and Miller movie first, and then a 21 Jump Street movie. You can't really make a comparison to the 21 Jump Street series because it is completely different. And don't even ask me to make any sort of comparison, or like, whatever happened in terms of the transition of the children's book Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs to the movie. If you ask me, somewhere down the line, my God, cocaine must be involved, because sweet merciful Neptune, like, how can you screw up that bad and make a style that, sweet Jesus balls, it's just, what the fridge happened there, really? No, but you get what I mean. They weren't making a movie that would be respectful to the source material. They wanted to go and create their own thing first. And even with the Lego movie, in a sense, so far, as I am recording this, that's their most original movie that they've done so far. Because basically, they were asked to do a movie based on Legos. So, of course, they would have a lot more creative freedom. And I will say right now, Lord and Miller are lucky. They really were extremely lucky over the fact that in the beginning of their career, Sony Pictures gave them that much creative freedom. Because if it were done by any other studio so far, like, they wouldn't even have a career. Like, they would be immediately kicked out, just like what happened with the Han Solo spinoff film. So yeah, it really does show some of the limitations. So at this point, what's going to happen is that I don't think we're going to be seeing Lord and Miller making movies based on already existing properties, or at least based on already existing movie franchises. Like, you're not going to see Lord and Miller make another Ghostbusters movie, or you're not going to see them add into something like, you know, see, like, we're going to have them do another Fast and Furious movie or Transformers movie or anything like that. You know, they're going to be stuck making something in which they have the creative freedom to go and create a Lord and Miller movie above anyone else's movie first. So it is a little bit of an interesting analysis. Now, I'm not saying that this is actual fact about their filmmaking style. This is just a little bit of a theory that I thought up based on what we have witnessed with the whole scenario that happened with the Han Solo spinoff movie and also some of their previous works as well. So that's the thing with Lord and Miller. They have to create their movie first before anyone else's. Even if it's a Star Wars movie, they don't want to make a Star Wars movie. They want to make a Lord and Miller movie first. Now, I will say, however, ever since then, a lot of people now express a lot of doubt, saying that maybe the movie is not going to be good now that Ron Howard is in there. And I do understand that there are a lot of movies that Ron Howard has under his belt that are not so great. I mean, like, he did do the live action How the Grinch Stole Christmas movies, and then he also did the Da Vinci Code trilogy. But I am actually still optimistic that the Han Solo movie is still going to come out as really good. Because keep in mind, Ron Howard actually does have something that Lord and Miller does not. Decades worth of experience as a director. I mean, keep in mind, Lord and Miller are new. They're, you know, like, they're kind of like the next big thing. Like, you know, what happened with Lord and Miller is that, yeah, sure, they're the directors of the 21 Jump Street movies and the Lego movie. You know what other movies that they have directed? None. Because all they did so far is just the 21 Jump Street films and the Lego movie. Those are the only ones that are worth noting. With Ron Howard, however, he has so many movies under his belt. I mean, sure, he has a lot of bad ones, but that's a process that all directors go through. Like, of course there's going to be at least one bad movie under a director's belt, or at least something that's not on par to their other films. And another thing that Ron Howard actually has that Lord and Miller does not, Oscar recognition, specifically actually winning an Oscar for being best director. So if I would tell you that Lord and Miller would actually be replaced with an Oscar-winning director, I don't even have to say the name, you'd probably still be optimistic. You say, okay, that still sounds good, but because the name Ron Howard is attached to it, like, of course, there are many other examples that you can randomly pick out that are bad, but that's because he has the experience that would allow you to do so. Lord and Miller does not. They don't have the years and decades of experience where you could pick out some of the examples that could be bad, where it could be a bad idea. And keep in mind, like, I'm keeping an open, like, when it comes to the Han Solo spinoff film, I'm keeping an open mind of how it's going to end up. I mean, sure, maybe it might turn out bad, or maybe it could turn out good. Maybe there is the possibility that replacing Ron Howard, replacing Lord and Miller with Ron Howard is actually a good idea. And maybe with what Lord and Miller wanted to do with the Han Solo spinoff film, it might actually turn out to be bad. They might actually bring out a bad movie and it could be a massive disappointment. There is still that possibility. And I mean, keep in mind, when it comes to Phil Lord and Chris Miller, not everything they touch turns into gold. We're talking about the freaking directors of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, for God's sakes. So you cannot expect that whatever Lord and Miller are going to direct is immediately going to be a masterpiece just simply by the fact that Lord and Miller directed it. Simple as that. No, you cannot expect that. So overall, maybe things are still going to turn out well with the Han Solo film, and maybe this could be what the movie needs. Like, maybe having Lord and Miller as directors is a bad idea. And I know for a fact that I'm going to get a lot of crap for that, because I know that there are going to be a lot of so many butthurt fanboys that are going to be so pissed to hear that maybe the idea of Lord and Miller not being attached to Han Solo is actually a good thing. Like, they're going to be so enraged in the comment section. I know that's going to happen, but still, I mean, like, I'm just going to remain optimistic for this idea. But yeah, honestly, it was just a really interesting thing to look into. And yeah, it does say a lot about Phil Lord and Chris Miller, about their directing style and how they want to go and do movies. And that shall be all that I have for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, hit that like button on our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.